Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about the year in movies. We're bringing the band back together again. We're going to talk about the hits, the misses, the depressing disappointments, and the pleasant surprises. My guests are Matt Soci of WFYI and Film Sociology, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the year in movies today on No Limits. We're going to talk about the hits, the misses, the pleasant surprises, and the depressing disappointments. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we have brought the band back together again. I think we're in double digits now.
Yeah,
the number of shows that
we're live together at the Village Vanguard this time.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So I am joined today by WFYI's own Matt Soci, the host of Film Sociology, the Film Yap's Christopher Lloyd, and Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott. Welcome back to all of you.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
It's good to have you guys here. So I'll tell you what. Let's just start with the basic stuff. And I'll start with Chris on this one because I always pick on Matt, right? Because he's in house.
I work here. It's
he's
all
in
right.
house, yeah. And just say, good year or bad year for movies?
Definitely a good year. Maybe not as good as 2015, which is the one I kind of hold up in recent times as being an outstanding year. But definitely above average, I would say. I've only seen maybe a handful of what I would call great films, but I've probably seen at least two dozen what I would call very, very good films.
Matt.
Yeah, I come with Chris on this, although looking at my list of what made the top 10 and the honorable mentions, a lot of them are coming from the first half of the year. And I think that's a good, because normally we tend to get the heavy hitters and the award favorites in the last couple months of the year.
Or even in the last week.
Yes, that's true. So, but there's a number of these I'm looking at that happened before the summer blockbuster season. Now, granted, you know, summer blockbuster season's now, what, April? So it keeps getting earlier and earlier. But no, I think there's a lot of good stuff out there, and hopefully some titles that people will check out more.
Ed, good year or bad year?
I'm the same as the guys. It's a middling year. Usually I love going into these trying to champion one film, and this year I don't really have one like that.
Not one that you want to write? Well, I'm going to stay with you then, Ed. Let's talk about what you considered were the best films of the year.
My number one film is Roma, which, again, I was telling Chris that I feel bad about this. I like picking something off the wall. And, you know, and campaigning for that. Roma is everybody's pick, you know, but it's just a charming, detailed, wonderfully acted movie. The first few minutes I thought, is this all it's going to be? It seemed like it was heading for boredom, but then it kicks in, and it's just a great place to be. I watched it twice in a row.
Chris,
was this your pick?
I am a captain of the anti-Roma brigade. So Ed and I and some of the other Indiana critics are going to have
maybe I should have put Matt between the two.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Lively discussion about that one. I haven't done my top 10, mainly because as we were doing this show here, we still have about two or three films that we are seeing actually this week. Yeah. So Welcome to Marwen, Mary Queen of Scots, and The Mule. So we'll have to see where things shake out of that. My pick is what I would have thought would have been a classic Oscar pick 3 months ago, but it's had a huge backlash grown against it, which is Green Book, which I'm utterly perplexed by the backlash against the movie. I think a lot of people are reading things you know, going on in their own heads into the movie that just aren't there. It's a wonderfully sentimental film. I mean, it is an old-fashioned sentimental film, but just such a beautiful story of, you know, two men with an unlikely friendship. It's all about togetherness and looking past your differences. And boy, do I feel like we need more of that in our lives and in our movies these days.
Okay. Matt.
My pick, and it's funny because he was in the news recently for being a, kind of a crabby old man, but my pick is Paul Schrader's First Reformed, with a solid performance from Ethan Hawke as a small church pastor whose faith is challenged by a parishioner who has extreme environmental points of view. And his church, which is basically a museum, is now being funded by a mega church with a really nice performance from Cedric the Entertainer, of all people. And we get into a challenge of faith, a challenge of religion and business. And Paul Schrader is one of those guys. This is the man who wrote Taxi Driver and did Hardcore and Blue Collar and Affliction. If you, you know, he's my go-to guy if you need a story of a man in a downward spiral. And this is his best film in years. And there's a couple of wacky moments by Schrader standards, but I was with it all the way.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the year in movies. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So we're going to go to the other end here, Matt, and say, okay, the worst film you saw this year.
Okay, I was going to look to my colleagues over here. Is anybody going to mention the John Travolta film?
I didn't see it, so.
Oh, man. Well, then I guess I'm in. Gotti. Gotti is really, it's with John Travolta as John Gotti, which maybe would have been interesting 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But do you remember there was a subgenre of really obnoxious parody films like Scary Movie, Epic Movie, Not Another Teen Movie. This felt like mafia movie.
Superhero movie.
Yeah, it felt like mafia movie at times. And there was already a mafia spoof film 20 years ago. If you wanted Goodfellas without any of the nuance and every other mob film you've seen in the last 40 years, and you get some major chewing of scenery by Mr. Travolta, but yeah, not a fun ride at all. Even if you like mob films, even if you have a framed Scarface poster in your in your pad, this is just not a fun film.
Chris,
I don't know if I could say the worst film of the year or the one that I hated the most, but probably the one with the biggest gap between expectations and the movie I saw was Suspiria, which is a remake of a film, which I know lots of people absolutely love it. It's 2.5 hours of dancing and witchcraft and a lot of grinding and fleshy stuff. And the problem with the film is you know exactly where the movie is going long before it gets there. And easily could be an hour shorter. And also features the absolutely wonderful actress Tilda Swinton, who people like to talk about her, that she's such a chameleon, which she is. But this has become this thing that people are doing in their films, and they've done it several times now, where they cast Tilda Swinton in several roles within one movie, often in makeup or other stuff to differentiate them. And they do that here. And it was cool the first time, and it's just become a gimmick that I've really gotten tired of.
Ed, how about you? Worst film of the year?
I'm like them, where I don't really have a worst. I have more most irritating.
Okay.
And I'm choosing between two. Right now, I'm going to go with Crazy Rich Asians, which if it was incredible sets, I'd be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, but once you get in there, and it's beautiful to look at. Once you get in there, though, there's just nothing to hang on to. I was frustrated to see so much work done on art direction and not much on the script.
So while we're here, in terms of were there any, when we're looking at the year in overview, were there any overarching themes that we saw come out this year, anything that kind of dominated? Matt, you're looking like you want to lean into this one.
Well, there's a couple. I think a lot of female directors.
Yeah.
And a lot of female-centric stories, with everything from a modern story like *The Hate U Give* to the costume dramas of *Mary Queen of Scots* and *The Favorite*. So I mean, there's been running the gamut as far as female-led films, and even something as mixed as Suspiria. So the fact that those are getting more.
I don't think Chris said it was mixed at all.
Well, I liked it more than Chris did. I think okay. I referred to the original Suspiria as a pop tune. While I referred to the remake as the 14-minute version of My Favorite Things by John Coltrane. So two different approaches to the same. Oh, Julie Andrews' version is the short 77 version.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I think the fact that they're getting showcased, female directors are getting showcased more, and hopefully there's more awareness that there's some really solid female performances, and not just from the usual suspects.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's the year of the woman in film. We hear about that in politics, but I think it's for real in the movies. A lot of not just female directors making their mark, just when I think about some of the best films of the year, they all off other than the exception of Green Book, obviously, that they seem to be really female centric stories. Most of the best documentary films that I've seen seem to have been centered on female characters. So yeah, definitely a very XX chromosome feel.
Yeah. And you could always, I mean, you could argue this almost for every year, but boys and their fathers, boys who don't get along with their fathers, basically, has fueled a lot of movies this year. Boy Erased in particular.
Beautiful Boy.
Yeah, beautiful. The kid comes out to his father. His father shipped him off for gay conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he loves him. The thing that makes the movie so great is that the characters are real, including the characters that are doing the things we detest. They're real, well-developed and well-presented characters, including that mean father.
I haven't seen the film, but the father's Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah.
And
he's excellent.
Yeah.
Just excellent.
Mm. I think between Timothy Chalamet and Lucas Hedges alone, I mean, I want these guys to do like a gross-out, horny teen comedy after doing so much cinema angst this year, especially Lucas. So,
yes.
By the Sea and straight into Boy Erased.
And Ben is back. I mean, it's rough. There's a term I credit Ed for, but he uses the term, I think you started it with Gran Torino, an R-rated after school special.
Yeah.
And I think Boy Erased is like that to a certain degree, and Beautiful Boy is like that to a certain degree, and Ben is Back is definitely like that. But I mean, there are various degrees of success with those.
We've got an email from a listener named Jerry. And again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, where does the panel come down on the Coen brothers' latest, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs? And how about Netflix as the best venue for films? Chris wants that one.
Yeah, I actually was just discussing this with some people. So, you know, Netflix came up with a film about 4 or 5 years ago called Beasts of No Nation that was like their first big feature film that they were trying to get awards for, and it fell flat on the awards circuit, which is too bad. It's an excellent film.
Yep.
And Amazon Studios has really come on with theirs. And the thing is, they always put their films in theaters first before they put it on their streaming service. And so they've had more success, and also HBO films. So I think the I'm sorry, I lost my track there for just a second.
Well, they're open. I mean, I think Scruggs opened in select theaters and Netflix the same day.
Same thing with Roma, yeah.
Correct. So I think with Scruggs, because it's an anthology series, I think even a misfire from the Coen brothers is better, heads and tails, better than most of the stuff out there. And I would say the weakest of the anthology series is good. I mean, there's one with Tim Blake Nelson that's a lot of fun. One with Tom Waits is an old prospector. The Stagecoach one, are those are probably my three favorites of those series.
I would say it's among my maybe three favorite films by the Coen brothers over the last 12 years, say.
Well, and I was thinking, you know, in the spirit of that question, we saw a film earlier this year, I think, released on Netflix with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda, which is a pairing, you know, 25 years ago would have would have dominated, you know. And the fact that they rolled it out on a streaming service says something about expectations, Matt.
And I missed it.
me too.
I saw Old Man with the Gun, but yeah, I know there was the Electric Horseman reunion. I know they did other films, but I have to look for that now.
Yeah, it's this weird thing now, this world where we live in, where there's now shows and movies and feature films coming out on these streaming services starring, you know, Oscar-winning actors and actresses that you just don't even hear about. And you're like, oh, you know, what's this thing with Emma Stone and Jonah Hill? I never even heard of it. That's actually a TV series.
It's the new network TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We are talking about the year in movies today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do it in several ways. You can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guest, all of them here in the studio with me, is a familiar group. We're joined by Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and WFYI's own Matt Soucy, the host of Film Sociology. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the year in movies. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Christopher Lloyd with Film Yap, Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo, and the famous Matt Soucy of WFYI Film Sociology.
Put an IN in front of that word.
Before we went to the break, we sort of talked about trends and then responded to Jerry's question about Netflix and other ways that people are watching movies. Aside from kind of the performances, the actual films themselves, were there other, and this is not, I don't think, anything in all the conversations we've had about this, conversation we've had, did you see different ways that that people are now experiencing films, Matt?
Well, I remember, well, I think from a technical standpoint, I remember that there are moments I have with my daughter who's 17. I call it pop culture Atticus Finch. And I remember when she was watching something on her phone, and I said, I don't ever want you to watch a David Lean film on your phone.
Yeah.
And she would go, who's David Lean? And I'd say, don't sass. But I think something like Netflix, as we were talking about earlier, is there are some films that they got a better chance of being seen on Netflix than, say, if a studio tried to put it out on 500 or 1,000 screens. I think a great example is not just the feature film, but the documentary about the making of the now-finished Orson Welles film, The Other Side of the Wind, and then the documentary, which the title eludes me, but it's something like, You'll Miss Me When I'm Dead, I believe.
Yeah.
That would probably play at the North Side for maybe a week or two for serious cinephiles, and then that would be it.
How do you think it's going to change the business?
Well, I've said this to people, but as much as I'm very much a physical media guy, mm-hmm. I very much believe that, all these different streaming services for music and movies and television, I'm the old fashioned enough that if you don't have a physical copy of something, you don't actually own it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I'm big into Blu-rays and things like that, but they're going to go away. People will still have them and still have their collections and play them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say within 10 years, you're probably going to see new physical media. I mean, or they will become like LPs are, very much a niche market. Mm-hmm.
So, I guess the part that kind of fascinates me, because for those of us of a certain vintage, at least part of the appeal of movies was that communal experience.
Yep.
That, and, this is making it one more thing that we kind of do in isolation. Do you think that's going to change the way movies are made and the kind of stories that they tell, Ed?
Yes. I saw a film called Border, a screener of it a few days ago, and then I went and saw it at the theater. And it's night and day. It's just a completely different experience. And I think about how many films people see only on Netflix and what they're missing. I like going into that theater. I like the darkness. I like all of that. I like the big screen. I like that we're here for a single purpose, and we're all going to be quiet, theoretically, until the experience is done.
Man.
And we, to piggyback with that, so yeah, when it happens, when no phones go off, when nobody's talking, when children aren't crying, and everybody's really into it. I remember when we saw Black Panther. I mean, there was like a concert at times. I mean, everybody was really into it. And it's those moments that you kind of get a little more faith in humanity, and that for me balances out the. I mean, it's convenient. I mean, us critics have first world problems getting screeners to look at, especially in the comfort of our own home. But it's like, I guess when I take my family to a movie, every now and then you must take one for the team, and you must go into a theater and share it with other people. And there's that wonderful thing of people you don't even know. You look at each other like, did you see what we just experienced, or did you see what we just suffered through?
Yeah.
we connect with people. You know, you can go to Amazon, you can order stuff, but get out of the house and actually make human contact from time to time.
Yeah, I don't know this stuff as well as you guys do, but I worry a little bit that a lot of the more intimate human, I have a feeling that films like the big spectacle movies, like the Black Panther and all of that, they're always going to be on big screens, and they're always going to be those big. But the more intimate, sort of low-key, human-driven stories are going to find their ways more and more onto these streaming services, and we're going to watch them and some of that isn't so bad because the virtue of a lot of this is that you're not confined to trying to tell the story in 2 or 3 hours if you've got a larger story than that. But yeah. Chris,
yeah, that's the one thing that we're not seeing as much of is the predicted blurring between formats of basically movies and shows, television shows. With the exception of that O.J. documentary from a couple of years ago that successfully passed itself off as a movie, even though it was a documentary miniseries. But you're still very much seeing things pitched and made to the studios, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or a traditional studio, as this is a feature film or this is a show. And some things like Orange is the New Black, which I think very much was pitched as here's a show for one season, it'll be great, but then it got a bunch of attention. They said, let's keep making them until we all want to kill ourselves. To me, the big difference between a feature film and a show is a feature film is an event.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you choose, you wind up to, let's go, we make the choice, you have a communal experience of some kind, and then you talk about it afterwards and like that. Shows are about a relationship. It's an ongoing thing. Whether you're watching a show a night, we have to wait once a week to see the next show, or it's a streaming thing where you can watch it all in the space of 13 hours. They're completely different experiences. And so far, we're not seeing as much blurring between the two, and I'm actually glad about that.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, I would say, and there are times where, like in my house, with certain series that we try to watch as a trio. And so, where feelings might get hurt if you've actually moved forward with somebody. But mom or dad, you were at work and you were bogged down all week, and I had to watch something. So that happens from time to time as well. But yeah, I mean, I think you kind of binge the shows if possible, and then actually make it an event for a film.
We've got an email from a listener named Chris. And again, if you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what Chris did and send us an email at nolimits@WFYI.org. Chris writes, how about Blaze with Ethan Hawke, whose face you never saw, only heard his voice?
That's probably because he saw the finished film.
Okay. Not one of your favorites then, huh?
It was a detailed look at a man that they gave us no reason whatsoever to be interested in, which is an interesting choice, but it was torture to watch.
I actually liked the movie not as much as Ed. I think it was great, but Ed and I are good friends, but we're on the opposite fence of a couple of films here at least. It was a story about like a country music nobody legend. You know, if you're in country music, everybody had heard of Blaze Foley as sort of this, lovable loser. It was very interesting. Ethan Hawke has quietly made a little career for himself as a director. He only makes a film every, I think it's maybe his third.
He's the anti-Franco.
Yeah, he makes maybe one every 5 or 6 years. I thought it was an interesting film, not a particularly great film.
Yeah, I liked it. I can't remember the gentleman who's, I think it's his first time out, but it's a story, the difference between becoming a star and becoming a legend. And it is kind of a stripped down version of the tortured artist story. So if you thought A Star Is Born was too glamorous and glitzy, you could watch Blaze and you'll get a similar storyline.
Yeah, I'm amazed that anyone could be entranced by Roma but be bored by Blaze.
In that spirit, for each of you, what was the most pleasant surprise of the year? The movie that you had absolutely either low expectations or no expectations for, and then thought, wow, this is actually okay. Go ahead.
There's a little film that came out. It made a little bit of a splash, but not a ton of box office, called Sorry to Bother You.
Oh, yes.
And it's starring one of my, possibly my favorite young actors working in film today. And it's just this very strange, science fiction-y, cautionary tale, satire of race relations. It's very hard to describe, but it's about a guy who starts working for an Amazon type of company, and he gets a start because he's a black guy from inner city Oakland who is very successful on the phone by using his white voice, and they dub in the actor David Cross as his voice, who's possibly even more than me, the whitest sounding guy in America. Just a very, probably won't make my top 10 list. I wouldn't say it's one of the best films of the year, but it's definitely one of my favorite films of the year because it's just so energetically original.
And it's number 2 on my best of list.
Okay.
I loved it. I just loved it. So, and
was that the most pleasant surprise for you too, Ed? Or is it?
That and there's a film called Instant Family that's playing now. Mm. And I mean, I dismissed it like we all did, I'm sure. You know, I only went to see it this last weekend because I was going with my son and I didn't want to see Creed 2 for the third time. So I ducked into Instant Family, and I mean, it's everything you expect it to be, but it's also got much more depth than you would guess. And Mark Wahlberg is good.
I mean, he's doing an action film for once.
He's doing the low key thing, so he's breathy whenever he's doing. You know,
right.
I don't know what to say. I try to do the best. He does that a lot when he's doing drama. Mm-hmm. But it's a charming and insightful film, and I didn't expect that.
For some reason, I'm remembering the comment the late Roger Moore made about his acting. He said, you know, when I'm amused, my right eyebrow goes up. When I'm frightened, it's my left eyebrow.
that's good.
So, Matt.
I think for me, and I hope more people check this out, but there was a lovely film version of Anton Chekhov's The Seagull. And this is one of those films, it's like Shakespeare and some other classical films or plays based on classical literature. It's remade every 10 years, you know, between PBS and the BBC or somebody else. And it's Saoirse Ronan, Annette Bening, Brian Dennehy. And, I mean, there's probably a dozen versions of The Seagull. But this one's under an hour and 50 minutes. It moves. It still tells the story, but it's not a lot of people in nice clothes sitting on the grass pontificating. There was a 60s version that Sidney Lumet directed with Vanessa Redgrave and James Mason, and it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I love Sidney Lumet, but I mean it's Roma compared to this version. So I was really glad to see a fast paced, not Michael Bay fast paced, but a fast paced Chekhov film.
We've gotten a tweet from Miller Time Podcast in response to the question about the worst film of 2018, and the response there was, it's a toss-up between Ready Player One or Pacific Rim. Anyone want to come to the defense of either of those?
Well, Pacific Rim was a sequel because Guillermo del Toro did not direct that one.
Yeah.
Ready Player One is kind of an infomercial for Warner Brothers' back catalog. And there's a sequence involving The Shining. I know it's not in the book. And it's an homage to kind of the 80s comeback, the 80s underdog films. And I know this gentleman thinks it's the worst film. I have to give Ben Mendelsohn props for studying all of the 80s authoritative jerk roles like William Atherton and some, you know,
James Spader.
Yeah, James Spader. So, it's a lot of cotton candy, but I liked it, obviously, a little more than this person did.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Hunter. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Hunter writes, my wife and I have stopped going to movie theaters for several reasons. The lengthy adverts and the always blasting sound levels are so unpleasant that we have turned to home viewing. where we can get subtitles, repeat sections and extra features, and choose the sound volume. The movie experience is no longer adult friendly.
Depends on what theater you're
Depends on which ones. And we want to be careful. There's certain ones. Well, there's one on the north side that we frequent quite a bit that I think handles things well.
I can't remember the last time I thought the volume in a movie theater was too loud. Usually I'm the other way. I'm like, turn it up. The only other maybe occasion is when it's so loud in the next theater that their sound effects are bleeding into yours.
When you can feel the wall rumbling, basically.
you're watching First Reformed and you can hear Transformers next door.
Or something like that.
There's another theater here in town where they routinely come out before each screening, introduce themselves to the audience, and they talk about what they welcome them, and in the course of that, mention about being quiet and stuff like that. But they do it in a way that it doesn't feel like they're laying down the law. It feels like they're welcoming. It helps. It's quieter there.
I think a gentle reminder is better than say a Barney Fife with a flashlight.
Well, it's like all the screenings we go to, the sneak previews, where the security person for whatever company is putting it on will come out and say, if anyone has any sort of recording device, we will throw you out. Then we will put you in jail. Then we will.
They mentioned Homeland Security.
And then we're going to evict your next of kin.
You're not going to get waterboarded over a loud phone.
Yeah. So we're getting a little close to a break here, and I want to get through this. I asked about most pleasant surprise, the thing you had no expectations for. The other side of that is the one you were really looking forward to, that you had high hopes for. And realized, this is just not good at all. Biggest disappointment, Matt.
And we're going to be talking about this film probably on Saturday at our critics meeting. The documentary Monrovia, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes of small-town life in the title of the film, in Monrovia, Indiana. No narrator, no talking heads, which is fine, but we covered this pretty quickly in 80 minutes. I didn't need an extra hour of it. I mean, and obviously we're like, okay, this is a great thing for a local standpoint to showcase an Indiana town. Not that much.
Chris.
Yeah, that's an excellent choice. A lovely idea for a movie. Very pure cinema in that there's literally no interaction with the filmmaker. It's just observation. And having been, a reporter who actually sat through like water commission meetings and things like that, where they say for 10 minutes of these guys talking about where to drill wells or where to pave a road. Yeah, that's the where the editor function needs to come in there a little more aggressively. So definitely that would be one that I was looking forward to that was disappointed. One that's not a bad film just because I do like it, but Black Panther is just getting raved up as, the greatest superhero movie of all time, and the anticipation for it was so staggering that I think people got to the actual movie and they already convinced themselves that they love it before they saw it. And again, I think people are reading things into the movie that, based on their own projections. I think it's a good superhero movie, perfectly serviceable. If I was going to rank all the Marvel superhero movies, that'd be about in the middle.
Therefore, you're a racist.
Therefore.
I'm kidding, of course, folks. Just kidding.
Yes. Ed, how about you? Biggest disappointment.
I was on the Monrovia. I mean, my grandma lived in Monrovia. We spent most of my childhood going there on the weekends. And
you felt like you relived the whole thing. Right?
And I mean, I don't think a single person in Monrovia would look at their life and say, this should be made into a very long movie. It's just people doing their regular stuff. And if they were making this to send to people on Mars, fine. But I think anyone in America knows this movie already.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the year in movies. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are three familiar faces and voices, Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and WFYI's own Matt Soucy, the host of Film Sociology. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please Stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the year in movies. We're hitting some of the highs and the lows and the surprises and the disappointments. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, Matthew Soucy of WFYI's Film Sociology, and Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo. So probably we ought to talk, since we're in the last segment now, and I only got the top pick for each of you, we ought to talk about I don't think we're going to get to the top 10, but maybe your top 5 and rationale for them. I'll start with Ed on that one. Give us maybe number 2.
Three Identical Strangers, documentary about triplets that didn't know they were triplets. And you think it's just going to be interesting, then it takes a turn. Remember, this is a documentary, and it becomes horrific. I mean, I was staggered by what they did. You know, and that was Three Identical Strangers, which I believe is out now, and Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm glad it was a hit. I agree with the people that liked it. I don't think it was too superficial. I loved it.
Okay. Matt, how about you?
Two and three. You Were Never Really Here, with Joaquin Phoenix as a man for hire to get things done when the police and the government cannot, and he's attempting to rescue a politician's daughter, but it's not that easy a job. It's from the director, Lynn Ramsey, who did We Need to Talk About Kevin, and it's at times a more brutal, less slick version of Drive as far as Joaquin Phoenix doing things that other people cannot. My number 3 is Leave No Trace. This was from the director of Winter's Bone. It's Ben Foster and, I hope I'm saying it right, Thomasillin McKenzie, a father and daughter who live in a park out in the woods. And as time goes on, we find out them being forced to move into a house is more constrictive than actually living out on the, in their environment, on their wits, in the wild. Fascinating film.
Chris?
Yeah, my top 10 is still evolving. I know my top 3. We mentioned Green Book. My number 2 would also be Bohemian Rhapsody, just a wonderful film. Such a celebration of not just a man, but the entire band and the music. It was just an rapturous experience from beginning to end to me. I loved it. My number 3 would be The Hate U Give, which is an urban drama that not too many people saw. Very, very well done. It's one of the sort of big little movies. It seems small, but it has almost Shakespearean arcs and depth to it. Beyond that, I don't know. The Favorite is probably going to be in the mix somewhere. Mm. Leave No Trace is probably going to be in the mix somewhere. And like I said, we've got two or three other films to see that hopefully will also be excellent.
What about Spider-Man?
Which one?
the animated one?
Yes.
That's probably my favorite animated film of the year. That's Spider-Man surprising. Into the Spider-Verse, which comes out this Friday in theaters. Honestly, a very, very, very weak year for animation, I think.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Cece. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Cece writes, I'm curious about the ages of the group. This group commenting on movies. Not every movie is intended for every audience. Suffice to say that none of us are quite as young as
that. No youngsters.
We're a part of the we're white males, therefore the repressed. So, but the thing is, there are if you know something is not made for you, and I've reviewed many films where I said this was not made for me, mm-hmm. and you have a good, and if it's still a well done film and you still have a good time watching it, then, you know, mission accomplished on that. I remember having to review the first Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. I have no business seeing that film, but I think nothing else that opened that week was available for me. So I saw it, and it was a good film. But it's I was definitely not the demographic for that.
Well, and I think the question also is, you know, sort of the subjectivity that goes into your analysis of films. I mean, how do you deal with that? Since in some ways you are providing a kind of service for people who want to see films, Chris.
It's tricky Go ahead, Ed. It's tricky because you've seen so many more films than most people that what works for you changes. So, I mean, I have to try to dial back and remind, you know, what if I paid for a sitter and, you know, how much this would all be? Is it worth all that? And it's hard to put yourself in somebody's shoes that way.
Chris?
I think I do a pretty good job of liking lots of wide ranges of things. There's not too many. I've said the only what I would call genre movie that I just don't like would be what I call like kicking movies. Martial arts movies where martial arts is just the entire movie. There's no real story there. I tend to get bored with those. But, you know, I have two young boys, 5 and 8, so I take them with me to a lot of the screenings for PG and G-rated films. And, you know, even when I can not enjoy it as much as they did, I can see what they're getting out of it. So, I don't know. I think other than martial arts movies, and skateboarding movies, which we've had a real plethora of skateboarding movies this year. Skateboarding movies and surfing movies, I admit. But I think, you know, as a critic, when you have, like, that disconnect, it's up to you to own your biases. And, like, you know, in my review or broadcast or whatever format I'm talking about the film, it's to say, like, this isn't really my thing, you know, and therefore I didn't like it, or this wasn't really my thing, but I still found myself getting engaged.
Wait, Chris, you don't like Frankie and Annette and The Endless Summer? Really?
Just in general,
or
surfing.
Or Big Wednesday?
Skateboarding movies. Because how many were
Dogtown and Z Boys and mid 90s?
Well, just this
and
year.
And then the
we
documentary
had
that was based on mid Dogtown and Z Boys.
No, I didn't like that one.
Okay, so we've got an email from a listener named Laura. Again, the email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Laura writes, "We liked Ready Player One as 80s kids, and it was fun pointing things out to the kids. Question, if streaming services are competition for theaters, will that eventually help keep admission costs from rising, or is that just a necessary evil in the industry? Although we enjoy the theater experience, we tend to wait for films to stream because it costs so much to go as a family these days, even for refreshments. Would like to have more straight-to-streaming new features targeted to kids' families. Many new ones I see pop up, at least on Netflix or TVMA."
Yeah, well, we're seeing, we're starting to move to these subscription service. What's the big one that's going under or slowly going under? Is it MoviePass, it's called?
Something, and now it's being resurfaced.
Yeah, now individual theater chains are starting their own, like, club system. Like, you know, pay $25 a month and see as many movies you want or something like that. I think we're probably going to see, in terms of the exhibitors, as they're known, moving to that model. Something that people, as a former assistant manager of a movie theater eons ago myself, a lot of things people don't realize is that the movie theaters keep only a very, very small percentage of the ticket price. Mm-hmm. The old model was 90-10. That was the split when a movie first came out. And then
they made all their money on the concessions.
Yeah.
Basically.
So people wonder why the small popcorn costs $7. That's because that's where all the money is in the concessions.
And I think because we've been doing this long enough, I've sadly become used to the commercials. If the commercials mm-hmm. aren't there at the first 20 minutes before the 20 minutes of trailers, then tickets are going to be $25. And we're not in New York. Unfortunately, it's just one of those things.
I don't think the cost is going to go down, though. I think mm-hmm. The studios are just going to make more films that you can best experience in a big theater. You know, it's more spectacular things.
We've gotten a question via Facebook, two questions actually, via Facebook. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. This is from Janet, who writes two questions about movies. Have you seen any indication the Me Too movement is being reflected in movies? And what films are you looking forward to seeing before the end of the year? I'll start with Chris on that one.
Well, I mentioned those three. I'm really looking forward to Welcome to Marwen, which is the new film starring Steve Carell, directed by Robert Zemeckis, based on a real guy's life, which it's hard to describe other than he went through this very traumatic experience and lost a lot of his cognitive abilities and started making like little miniature dolls to sort of act out his feelings and experiences. It just as soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, I have got to see that movie. The Mule with Clint Eastwood, just because I'll see anything by Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that the studio is kind of hiding the movie from us. They're not screening it for us. So I'm curious to see if it's just a dog or there's some sort of something else going on.
How about the Me Too movement? Are you seeing that reflected?
Not really. Understanding how movies work, it's, you know, from the idea time that someone has an idea for a movie to the time you're seeing it on screens, whether it's Netflix or in a movie theater. I mean, at a minimum, 2 years and probably more like 3 to 5 years is how long it takes to put a movie together. So I think we'll start seeing those more overt themes in the films of 2019 and 20.
Gotten a tweet from a listener named Varon. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And again, if you want to join the conversation by Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Varon writes, the discussion about Black Panther on No Limits with flippant remark about being racist shows you need some people of color in this group. Matt, you're the one.
I'm the one who said it. I did. So
I can't disagree. It's something we've talked about in the Indiana film critic groups is we need more diversity within the group. We've got one woman. I don't know if we have anyone who's non-pasty.
Right.
It's one of those things that, you know, part of the Indiana Film Journalists Association, of which we're all members and which we'll be announcing our awards next Monday. You know, one of our primary missions is to encourage people to do it. And I don't know if we're just failing in that regard or there are some communities that don't feel the need to get into this great gig where we work tons of hours for little to no pay. But I don't have to say. It's definitely a legitimate criticism of critics.
Yep. And as a person who chimed in, yes. And there's also a South Park episode that addresses the same flippancy that I just had. So way to catch me on that.
We have another tweet from a listener named Tracy again. You can find us on Twitter at WFYI. What so far, Tracy writes, are you most looking forward to seeing in 2019, Ed?
The Avengers, the joyous Avengers. I'm sorry.
Seeing everybody come back to life.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, John. I'm with you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, probably the Avengers, just because I've laid down some markers and some bets with folks of who's going to actually come back and who's actually going to be dead. My short version of this, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Avengers of Infinity Wars, is anybody that, you know, went into ash and just, you know, dissipated is going to come back. Anybody you saw actually killed, like, you know, explicitly killed, I think is going to stay dead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There were gasps by people older than me when that was happening in the last film. And unfortunately, my old critic head went, that film made a kajillion dollars. They're not killing. They're coming back. Even they put a glow around them, like at the end of the Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Well, they're bringing them back.
Yeah, but it was still such a shocking and bold thing in a big mainstream movie. And I do think we're going to see, with the MCU, the Marvel Comics universe, I think we're going to see some of the actors who've been playing these roles for, you know, 10 years now or more, Robert Downey Jr. I think they're going to segue out of the series and we're going to see new people coming to the fore.
And if they don't come back, I'll be pleasantly surprised, but I don't buy it for a second.
Well, especially since some of the ones who did dissolve into ash already have sequels in their own film franchises scheduled. So.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2 is coming out. So.
Yeah. Oops, just gave away.
Except his aunt this time will be played by Ariel Winter from Modern Family, since everybody keeps getting younger and younger.
We are talking about the year in movies here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Norman has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Norman, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Crawl, and good afternoon to your guests. I wanted to piggyback on something that one of your guests had mentioned about he still buys movies, and so I do too. I still buy movies. I'm also an installer, so I'm all into the 4K, the OLED 4K, and all that. And what I wanted to say is that when it comes to streaming, it can't compete. The closest thing that can compete with 4K, Netflix is not doing a bad job because it's straight through. You got a clear signal, so it's clean. But to actually put a 4K disc and a 4K player with a 4K OLED system and a 7 or 11 channel sound system, no competition whatsoever. So they can stream all they want, but I don't see it competing. Not me in the physical sense.
I sense a lot of passion in your voice there, Norman. Yeah. Thanks very much for the call.
Norman, tell us more. Yeah. Tell us more slowly.
Yeah. Thanks much for the call.
I don't disagree. And home theater systems can be so such an amazing thing. A lot of people don't want to deal with having, you know, 5 to 8 speakers spread around their room. So those sound bars have become very popular, like those long, thin speakers that's supposed to try and emulate the home theater experience, which it can't, especially without a woofer. Got to have a woofer.
Yeah, and I'm one of those that because I buy it, I listen to everything, commentaries, special features, because if it really, really catches my interest, I want to know more about the film itself. And I know for a lot of people, it's just Friday or Saturday night for them, and I get that, but I like to dig a little deeper.
So we're getting close to the end of the program. And I ask, since this is the time, we're getting into the season when people are out of work, have time to see more movies than normal. What's one or two films that are out right now, either in the theaters or, you know, that are streaming or on Blu-ray that you would recommend they go see? Ed, I'll start with you.
Sorry to Bother You.
Sorry to Bother
Definitely.
You. Okay. Any other choice? Second choice?
Green Book, and I can make all the apologies, but it worked for me too.
Okay, Chris.
I would say the Hate U Give. I think that's still out in some theaters, and Green Book would be my two that are out right now.
Green Book and the Hate U Give. It's 1989 all over again. I liked Hate U Give more than I did Green Book. I would say I think The Favorite opens this weekend.
Yeah, this weekend.
So I love sharp tongue costume dramas, and this is one of those. And I think this one is also out is Destroyer. Nicole Kidman is a corrupt it's Nicole Kidman's Training Day, but it's more maternal than, say, Training Day.
I think that comes out theaters here probably around Christmas or maybe even the week after Christmas.
All right, so be on the lookout for
that's
that.
That's a tough movie.
At Eternity's Gate with Willem Dafoe as Van Gogh.
That's out right now.
So I got to ask this question for my daughter, who's reliving part of her childhood. What's the buzz on the Mary Poppins sequel? Anything out there?
Well, I have you guys seen it?
No, we.
I have seen it. It's very entertaining. It's just a spoonful of sugar. There's not really like there's no investment, emotional big. You know, there's not. People are nominating Emily Blunt for Best Actress. I was like, well, that's nice. I mean, my memories of the original are pretty dim, so I kind of was experiencing this one here almost as a new film.
How are the Cockney accents in this one?
Quite good, quite good.
Well, I think that probably will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my panel of familiar guests here, WFYI's own Matt Soucy, the host of Film Sociology, Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap, and Ed Johnson Ott of Nuvo. I'm sure we'll be getting together again, guys, probably sometime in the middle of the summer to see how things are going. We're going to be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about cars and car buying trends. I'd also like to thank our audience for, as usual, some great questions. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.